In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit.
"10 Gallons of Infected Saliva, or The Cuckold Avenged" by Scott Phillips. You couldn't join the Projectionist Union without experience you couldn't get without being in the union. But I wanted to be one so bad I persisted until finally Barney Sack, a wizened old pro from the Fox Twin downtown, took pity on me and told me that the union would count hours worked at certain select non-union theaters. "Which non-union theaters?" I asked. The notion baffled me, since I'd applied for work at every motion picture theater in town and been rebuffed at each for lack of a union card.
"Fuck movies," Barney said.
I thought he was cursing the entire medium. I must have had a blank look on my face, because after a few seconds he squinted and hit me on the shoulder.
"You know, dirty movies. Raincoats and Kleenex. Kind of thing you watch with your pants around your ankles. Air Capital Theater out west on Kellogg's got a special deal with the union."
"I don't think that'd be a good job for me," I said, thinking mostly of what I'd tell my parents, who were already worried I was going to quit college and start associating with a low crowd. We were in the booth waiting for a real change on The Deer Hunter in Cinema One.
"One of their guys just quit. You go in with my say-so, they'll take you on. Keep it to yourself, but I jerry-rigged their changeover system myself under the table. I don't imagine they pay for shit, but that's what you get when you're a fucking scab."
I stopped into the Air Capital Cinema that same afternoon, emboldened by the certainty that my bad fortune would persist and that I could at least tell Barney I'd given it a shot. The manager was behind the combination box office and concession stand, selling dirty playing cards and prophylactics alongside the popcorn and Good and Plenty's. His robin's egg blue tuxedo was a much larger version of the one I'd worn to my junior prom, and remarkably clean, considering that he must have worn it almost daily. His distracting wheeze I at first put down to lung disease, until I figured out that it was just the strain of moving his bulk from one leg to the other. When I asked him, months later, why he didn't get a swivel chair to sit on, he muttered something about the unhealthiness of the sedentary American lifestyle. His name was Herd Mackey, and though he had good things to say about Barney and the union, he ignored my question about why the Air Capital Cinema and its sister theater, The Pageant, were allowed to remain union-free.
"You've operated a projector, I assume?"
"A 16mm one, in Wichita State."
"Psh, you know what Werner Herzog says? 16mm is an amateur medium. Come on upstairs, I'll show you the works and introduce you to the Anders, the other projectionist."
The stairs were disastrously steep, which spared me having to ask my next question, which was why he was working concessions in box office instead of the projection booth. He heaved and panted as he climbed ahead of me. Lurching so badly, I thought at one point he was having a heart attack, and I actually took a couple of steps downward to get out of his way. At the top, a man of 60 or so, wearing overalls and nothing else, stared at me while we both waited for Herd, his mutton chops glistening and plastered down with sweat, to catch his breath.
"New man, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights,"
Herd managed, then went back to gasping. Anders nodded and returned his attention to the window. On the screen, a chesty blonde was getting mounted from behind by one guy, while she sucked off another. Though I'd spent my adolescence enslaved to various titty mags, this was my first introduction to real hardcore smut. That the print was badly scratched and faded to a thin blue, and the sound, tinny as an AM radio, hardly mattered compared to the fact that sexual intercourse was happening, unsimulated, on screen. Anders had started paying close attention to the screen, then he bared his teeth, reached down and yanked hard on a big wooden knob with a screeching noise that must have been audible in the seats below as the projector on the left started rewinding.
"Why don't you put some oil on that fucking thing?" Hurd said.
"I oil it once a week. That's the way Barney made it."
"Hey, Barney's the one sent the kid over. What's your name again?" he asked me.
"Ace," I said. It was Amos, but I was trying to build a new persona, and I was tired of being known, as I inevitably was, as Anus.
"All right, Ace, you start Tuesday. Come in at 6 and you can train with Anders here. Then Wednesday you're on your own. Refreshments are free, but you gotta pay for any adult materials, 30% off."
I glanced around the moldy booth. In one corner was a table stacked with what looked like hardcore mags, and next to it was a Kleenex box and a trash can. I couldn't help noticing that there wasn't any place to wash your hands up there. The passenger window of my sleek red 77 Opel came down, and my girlfriend of 3 weeks expectorated a mouthful of my semen and her saliva in a graceful arc onto the drive-in pavement. I took advantage of the awkward aftermath to tell her about the job, uncertain of what reaction to expect. "It's just a union thing." Old and unmaintained though it was, the speaker hanging off my window provided a clearer, brighter tone than the PA at the Air Capital Cinema. "I'm not sure what I think about porno." To my considerable relief, Sandy gave me a snort of derision. "Didn't we just watch Fonda getting off on the legless guy a minute ago there?" "Well, they're pretending," I said. "Jane Fonda wouldn't have real sex on camera." "Pretty real to me." She straightened herself up in her seat and returned her attention to the movie. "We can go now if you want," I said, having seen the dirty part and my knob having been swabbed. My interest in the whole drive-in concept was pretty well exhausted. It was a hot night, and I'd stripped off my T-shirt for the blowjob, and she reached for it off the back seat. "I want to see the rest of it." She wiped her mouth with the shirt, tongue and inside cheeks included, and I snatched it away. "My shirt's not a cum rag." "Fine, it's great for my mouth, but not on your shirt. It's my Jim Morrison shirt. I'm sure it's not the first time he's wiped spunk off some co-ed." "We've both seen this already. Let's go." "I want to see the part where Dern calls her slope cunt and walks into the ocean." "I'm going to get a Coke then," I said. "Get me a Sprite. You owe me now." I put my cum-stained shirt back on and hiked back to the refreshment stand. The night was sticky and buggy, half the cars rocking to the tune of teenage intercourse, and the saliva on the shirt actually felt pretty good against the heat. While I waited in line behind a stoned couple who couldn't decide what they wanted, though we'd been in line a good 10 minutes, my friend Tad poked my shoulder and asked me how the job search was going. He was thrilled at the idea of my working at a place we often discussed but had never actually had the nerve to visit, but his lip curled when I asked him how his own work was going. "Broke an old lady's jaw today." "Accidentally or on purpose?" "They sent me on my first solo house call. I was stapling the jaw shut, and I'd only done it a couple of times before, and never on an old lady with osteoporosis. Fucking lower jaw just snapped inward into two pieces." "She probably didn't care." "Yeah, well, her family sure did. I thought her grandson was going to fuck me up good." He'd been fired from 3 jobs since 10th grade, all of them for major fuck-ups. A co-worker burned with fryer grease, a totaled delivery van, a $200 funeral spray crumpled into salad beneath a dozen crates of roses. The unfairness of it rankled more than the job losses themselves. Tad was a hard worker, dedicated and possessed of a sterling work ethic. I, on the other hand, hadn't ever lost a job, despite a deep-seated disinclination toward making anything but the slightest token effort. "Think you could get me some hours at the porno? I may not be long for Mattingly Brothers." "I'll ask," I said, wondering what kind of damage Tad could do at a porno theater. "There's another reason I may not last at the funeral home." He bounced up and down on the balls of his feet, a deranged grin on his face. "I'm slipping the meat to Mrs. Mattingly." 1 medium Coke and 1 medium Sprite and a large popcorn, extra butter," I said to the counter girl. She looked at Tad and blushed, which he didn't seem to notice.
"Did you hear what I said? I'm fucking the boss's wife!"
"I heard," I said, fairly impressed. skinny, bug-eyed Tad had a way with women that I could only put down to his supreme self-confidence. The job agreed with me. By September, I could do pretty much any job that needed doing at the theater, and I was only in the projection booth my original 3 nights a week. The rest of the time, I ran the ticket counter and concessions and cleaned up, which left plenty of time to do homework.
"That's okay with me," Hurd said, when he first found me doing math problems sitting behind the counter. "Long as you keep the spunk cleaned up off the crapper floor."
Hurd started disappearing earlier and earlier in the evenings, so I was locking the place up some nights. He didn't have a phone at home, and if any problem arose that I couldn't really handle, I was screwed. But the theater was a pretty quiet place most of the time, and the only melodrama usually involved some guy trying to jack off some other guy who didn't want to be jacked off. Not by another guy, anyway. Sandy came up into the booth with me to screw a few times those first weeks, thrilled at the thought of doing it in a house of filth. But the thrill wore off soon after that, and I started going to her apartment straight after work. The relentlessly masturbatory atmosphere of the Air Capital Cinema made the thought of jerking off tedious, and finally distasteful, and with Sandy as a sexual outlet, I stopped masturbating entirely, at least for a while. This didn't hold for everyone. The available evidence pointed to Anders jerking off constantly during his shifts. Once I caught him beating his meat to a magazine called The Wonderful World of Assholes. He claimed he hadn't heard me coming up the creaky stairs and seemed not in the least embarrassed to have been interrupted, which I suppose made sense considering that there was an auditorium below us filled with guys, more or less openly doing the same thing. In November, Tad called me up at the theater. "I'm bringing her in," he said, laughing. "Bringing who in?" "Beth, dumbass. I'm bringing her in to watch a porno. She's never seen one before." "Who's Beth? She a new one?" "Beth Mattingly, the boss's wife." I didn't try to talk him out of it, but I didn't encourage it either. It got weird when women came in. For one thing, we had to watch out for prostitutes, since that could get us busted. For another, some guys got flustered when a woman came into the theater and skulked out. And then, one time, a middle-aged guy with a lot of gold chains and aviator sunglasses, that's indoors, at night, came in with a younger woman with elaborately teased blonde hair and a lot of real-looking jewelry. They went into the feature and 15 minutes later came out screaming at me. Once I calmed them down enough to speak coherently, I understood that someone sitting directly behind them had ejaculated onto the top of the lady's hairdo. Whoever it was had apparently decamped, and all I could offer was a refund and an apology. Tad showed up at 9:15 with a woman on his arm. I guess I expected her to be some kind of cross between Mrs. Robinson and Jennifer O'Neill in Summer of 42, but she was a pretty average-looking lady of 40 or so, kind of skinny, with a purple dress on and shoes that matched it exactly. Her hair was auburn and straight down to her shoulders with a flip, and she looked really excited, like she and Tad were robbing a bank. There was a little smudge of lipstick on her upper left incisor, and I couldn't stop glancing guiltily down at a run in her pantyhose. She had nice legs, actually, and while we stood there talking, I started thinking she wasn't so bad-looking after all. She was drunk, too, and giggling. "She has 3 kids, Tad told me once, all being groomed for the priesthood or the mortuary industry. Tad looked back at me and grinned as he led her into the auditorium to enjoy our current feature, Up the Ass with People. I settled back, looking at a copy of Lesbian Dildo Bondage No. 7. It was a title we weren't allowed to carry in the shop next door, part of an unwritten agreement between management and the vice squad, but a copy had been sent in a shipment by mistake, and I was thinking about taking it home to Sandy, who liked me to describe the smut I'd watched at work, even though she didn't like watching it herself. The door opened, and a slender, worn-out-looking guy in a heavy overcoat came in.
"When's the feature start?"
"It's continuous."
"What do you mean, continuous?"
The idea seemed to infuriate him.
"Runs all the time. When it stops, we start it again." "When's the beginning going to happen? I hate to walk in the middle."
"I don't know."
"How can you not know? It's a movie theater."
"Look, mostly people just go in, they watch a little bit, and they come out when they're done."
"What do you mean, when they're done?"
"When they've had their fill, you know." He was taking in little short breaths through his nose and tapping his left toe against the counter in a rapid tattoo. This was my least favorite kind of customer, the kind who's disgusted and outraged by the thought of fuck flicks, but buys a ticket anyway. They were probably the ones who got the biggest thrill out of the whole enterprise, though.
You mean when they're done masturbating?
Oh, no, sir. One of the first things Hurd had drummed into me was that we never, ever acknowledged to any outsider that we were aware that the sin of Onan was practiced in our theater. I don't think that's what they do.
Like hell, he said. They're jerking off in there right now, and worse, I bet.
Are you going to buy a ticket, sir? Admission's $7.
$7? You're out of your goddamn mind. A movie's $4.50.
$7, mister. He reached inside his overcoat and pulled out a revolver. It looked heavy, and he waved it around, never quite pointing it at me, but scaring me shitless nonetheless. He took it into the auditorium, and I sat there for a minute trying to think what to do. Finally, I picked up the house phone and rang the booth.
"What is it?" Anders said.
"Guy just busted into the auditorium without buying a ticket."
"What'd you let him do that for?"
"He had a gun." Anders was quiet.
"Shit.
Should I call the cops?"
"Never ever call the cops, boy, unless a crime's been committed of the kind we can't deal with ourselves."
He hung up on me, and I debated calling the cops anyway. I stood up and walked to the doors, pulled one of them open slightly. I thought I could see the guy, seated toward the back in a row by himself. In the front sat Tad and Mrs. Mattingly, wrestling, while the rest of the audience watched them as attentively as they did the movie. I sat back down on my stool at the booth and started doing my homework in a distracted way, memorizing dialogues in German about going to the lakeshore and renting a boat. It was a good 10 minutes later as Monika und Hans were discussing the possibility of a second day on the lake that the shot went off, explosive and cracking, followed by a woman's scream. A customer blew out the doors with his dick hanging out his pants.
"Hey, mister, what was that?"
I asked, as he disappeared through the front door without answering. The phone rang, and not knowing how else to react, I picked it up.
"What the fuck was that?" Anders said. "That your buddy with the gun shooting people?"
"He's not my buddy. Think we should call the cops?"
"Fuck no. I'll put on the house lights and you check it out."
Inside the auditorium, most of the audience was cowering on the floor, including Tad and Mrs. Mattingly. They were starting to peer up over the seats to see where the shot had come from, and I heard a few groans of disgust and horror as they registered the sight of the dead man in the overcoat, revolver in hand, brain case blown 2 rows behind him, blood and bone all over the back of the theater. God damn it, I was the one going to have to clean this shit up. People started standing. Mrs. Mattingly, the only woman in the whole building, screamed again when she saw the body, the scream transforming itself slowly into keening as she stumbled up the aisle toward the corpse. When she reached it, she threw herself on it, sobbing, her clothes slick and sticky with fresh blood. In front of the screen, upon which a wholesome-looking blonde girl was taking it in the poop chute from a guy dressed as a sailor, stood Tad, looking for once like he wasn't in on somebody's secret joke. And I pushed open the auditorium doors to buzz Anders upstairs and ask if it was okay to call the cops.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums!
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by the Crime Wave.